You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And exhale. On that note, welcome into another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. It wasn't always pretty, but the Rockets did get it done on Thursday evening at home against the LA Clippers, 101-96 winners. With the win, the Rockets improved to 54-14 on the year. The Clippers fall to 37-30. In that virtual tie for the eighth and final spot in the Western Conference, which means these two teams could play in the first round of the playoffs, but the Rockets could also play about five other teams there, so it's not really worth focusing too many resources of our postgame show on that, although I will discuss it briefly. More than anything, I think the story tonight, it wasn't pretty for the Rockets early. They actually got down 12 midway through the third quarter, 66-54. But what the Rockets showed tonight was something that my friend Stanford KP on Twitter, you know him as Karthik Prasad here on the podcast, calls the turbo nuclear button. That even when things are not going your way, you have a way to flip a switch at any given moment and turn things in your direction. And that, to me, even in a game in which the Rockets clearly did not have their ace stuff, it's my biggest takeaway of all. Because down 12, 66-54, with 7 minutes left in the third quarter, folks, the Rockets had 54 points with 7 minutes left in the third quarter. That's 29 minutes into a game. 29 plus, actually. That's not good. Very few things were going their way. Chris Paul was dreadful tonight. Now, Eric Gordon off the bench, brilliant. We'll talk about him as we move through the podcast. 23 points, 8 of 13, including a ridiculous 7 of 9 from 3. Chris Paul, awful. We mentioned 11 points, 3 of 13. James Harden, 24 points, 7 assists, 7 of 16 shooting. He was pretty good, nothing otherworldly, but certainly, I don't know if I would say an MVP-worthy performance, but a very good one from the league's MVP frontrunner. Did have a dagger shot at the end of the game. But in the middle of the third quarter, there was not a lot for the Rockets that was going well offensively or for the team as a whole, other than a couple of Eric Gordon threes in the first half. And it would have been very easy to shrug and say, this is a matchup that's not good for us. Even though I think there were some extenuating circumstances going into this game, the Rockets had lost two of three games to the Clippers this season. It would be easy to say, hey, we're a little rusty. We haven't played since Monday. It's not our night. And the Rockets did have essentially a three-game lead on both the Warriors and the Raptors for the best record in the NBA. Well, the Rockets did not use the excuses. Instead, they found a way to flip the switch. Now, it happened with an adjustment by Mike D'Antoni. It was pretty clear that Chris Paul did not really have it tonight for whatever reason. Again, we'll discuss on that as we make our way through our usual 3 points recap here at Locked On Rockets. But they substituted in Eric Gordon and Luke Bamute, took Chris Paul out. The pace picked up. Eric Gordon hit a couple of threes. And before you know it, the Rockets were on a 14-0 run to take a two-point lead and ended up in the fourth quarter leading for the vast majority of the time. Now, the Clippers did go on a 6-0 run near the end of the game, got it to as close as two, but then James Harden isolated against Austin Rivers, hit the step-back jumper with 30 seconds left to clinch the game. Another MVP moment in a season full of them for James Harden. Even if his overall stat line, as we mentioned, 24 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, 7 of 16 shooting, even if the overall stat line was not quite MVP James Harden, at the same time, his clutch performance was. And if there's a difference between 2018 James Harden and 2017 James Harden, and I've said this all year long, it's that James Harden this year has tended to own the moments when his team needs them most. And yet again, on Thursday night against the Clippers, that was more evidenced by that final step-back jumper over Austin Rivers, giving the Rockets a four-point lead, two possessions in the final 30 seconds. And at that point, it was pretty much game over. Now, so many things to unpack. We'll discuss individuals in the final couple of segments of this show, but to lead off in our initial segment, I want to discuss the team as a whole. I mentioned the turbo nuclear button. That's big, because even in the playoffs, and I should even say especially in the playoffs, when you go against better opponents on a regular basis, you're going to have games where things are not going your way. So to be able to persevere and to not get discouraged if things are not going your way, even for 2.5 quarters, the way they did tonight, that persistence, that stubbornness is admirable. And I'm not sure the Rockets had that gear a year ago. Game 6 is the obvious example against the Spurs. There were a few others throughout the season where it just felt like the Rockets were treated as, I don't know if you would call this a schedule loss, other than maybe you could say they're a little rusty, but just in general, a 1 out of 82. Bleep happens. And the Rockets did not do that tonight, so that ability to persevere, I think that's a big deal. Also, I think it's important to, in fact, show that the Clippers are not a bad matchup, because undoubtedly, fair or unfair, if the Rockets had lost this game and lost 3 of 4 against the Clippers, and the Clippers being 1 of 4 or 5 teams that are very viable to play you in the first round, you would have heard some folks saying, is this a bad matchup for Houston? Now, I don't buy it for several reasons. First, the Clippers tonight, 96 points. They are a top 7 offensive team in efficiency in the NBA heading into this game. So for the Rockets to hold them below triple figures, that's pretty committed defense on their part. And Trevor Ariza, even though he was just 2 of 10 shooting from the field, I thought he was very engaged. James Harden had a block and a steal. It felt like both came in very key moments. P.J. Tucker struggled from the field just like Ariza. 1 of 7 for P.J., but he played 29 minutes. Trevor and P.J. combined were just 3 of 17 from the field, 2 of 9 from behind the arc. Missed a lot of the shots they've been making of late. Luke Bamute off the bench, just 1 of 6 from behind the arc, but Luke was actually a plus 22 in his 25 minutes. It seemed to flip in the second half, especially when they inserted Luke. The pace picked up. I would say all three of those guys, the defense was still there, even if the shooting was not there for the Rockets. To hold a team like the Clippers, top 7 offense in the NBA, to 96 points, it speaks to how engaged you are defensively. On a night, the Rockets actually just 12 of 41, below 30% from behind the arc. So for the Rockets to win games defensively, that's certainly a nice thing to say, but or to see. But in terms of the Rockets-Clippers matchup, when you look at the formula that the Clippers beat the Rockets, now injuries were a big part of it. The first game, there was no Chris Paul, there was no Clint Capela, and there was no Luke Bamute. Second game, there was no James Harden, there was no Nene. So there were some extenuating circumstances to begin with in those games. But beyond that, the first one, the Clippers scored 128. The next one, they scored 113. The Clippers won those games because the Rockets could not get stops. That was not the case tonight. And no, I do not believe that the Clippers have any formula to stop the Rockets. The Clippers are about as mediocre as it gets, 15th in the league, when it comes to overall defensive efficiency. Now, there were a few possessions, especially in the first half, where the Clippers caught the Rockets off guard with a full court press and caused a turnover. A couple of them got lucky calls on what amounted to flops in the backcourt that should not have been rewarded. But either way, we're talking about 2 or 3 possessions early in the first half. The full court press was not a consistent difference maker for them, and the Clippers are not a consistently above average team and that on the defensive end of the floor, and that was not how the Clippers won the first 2 games against the Rockets. So for those taking how the game looked early and saying that it's proof or wondering if it's proof of whether the Rockets have a matchup problem against the Clippers, I reject that completely. You might have a matchup problem with a team if the same thing keeps happening again, but the Rockets have not had an offensive problem against the Clippers all year long. They didn't in the second half. They essentially had one bad half against the Clippers because they shot poorly. And for the game, we mentioned the Rockets shot just 12 of 41 from behind the arc. Trevor Ariza and P.J. Tucker, your 2 starting forwards, were combined 3 of 17. Chris Paul was 3 of 13. A lot of the shots were open. They just missed them. Joe Johnson off the bench, he actually played very well, I thought, in every facet but shooting. They dumped it down to him on the low block. He did a great job of passing, moving the ball. Unfortunately, his teammates missed shots. And then when Joe was open from 3, well, he missed all of his threes as well. 12 of 14 as a team. And of those 12 threes, 7 of them came from Eric Gordon. If not for Eric Gordon, you would have been 5 of 32. Excuse me. So I don't see any matchup problems in terms of what ailed the Rockets in this game. I think, and maybe after having 5 games and 7 nights, having a couple of nights off, maybe there's some rust. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just the classic 1 out of 82 randomness. But I don't see, other than 2 or 3 possessions where the Clippers utilized that full court press in the first half and got turnovers, other than that, and that's an incredibly small subset of the game, I don't see anything that the Clippers personnel caused for the Rockets to struggle in the offensive end of the court. And of course, the struggle is relative. The Rockets did score 101 points. So really, the struggles came over the first 29 minutes or so of the game. Rockets did finish with 47 points in the last 19 minutes. So, again, that turbo nuclear button, they were able to flip the switch. But no, I do not believe the Clippers pose the Rockets any sort of problem, especially on the defensive end of the floor on a consistent basis. I think the Rockets, for whatever reason, they just missed a lot of good looks. And fortunately, rather than dwell on it, the Rockets played through. Mike D'Antoni showed a willingness to experiment with combinations. And in the second half, that combination with Eric Gordon and Luke Bamute, Luke plus 22 in 25 minutes, Eric Gordon plus 19 in his 30 minutes, that ultimately proved to be the difference as the Rockets pulled away 101-96, improving to 54-14 on the year. And it's a big win because it felt in the middle of the third quarter like maybe this was a day that had slipped away from the Rockets. And not just for them, but in results away from Toyota Center as well. Last night, the Warriors, without Stephen Curry, without Klay Thompson, they were going up against a Lakers team that was very hot, and you thought on paper, this might be one that the Warriors lose, so you can further build that lead for the one seed. The Warriors found a way to get the win. Tonight, Toronto, the same three games back. Now, Toronto's three games back, Golden State's two. The difference is Toronto has a tiebreaker over Houston, Golden State does not. So effectively, they're both three games back with now 14 to play for the Rockets. Toronto was down entering the fourth quarter against a very good Indiana team on the road. Toronto came back and won. So all of a sudden, midway through the third quarter, when those results were known, you started to sweat. At least I did, starting to think that maybe this thing shrinks to two and there's a little more drama down the stretch than you might want. Well, the Rockets, by virtue of that turbo nuclear button, they flipped the switch, they held serve, and now, by virtue of the win, which, of course, is their 20th in their last 21 games, now three in a row after the Raptors snapped that 17-game winning streak last Friday, but with the three-game lead with 14 games left, to put it in perspective, if the Rockets finish 11-3, then Golden State has to finish 14-0 to pass them. And of course, that's the Warriors team that has no Stephen Curry and no Klay Thompson for the immediate future and may not have Kevin Durant either due to a rib injury. So it was a big answer for the Rockets. The competition is going to get tougher starting Saturday night. They have a three-game road trip in four nights at New Orleans, at Minnesota, at Portland. I think they're aware of that. Sometimes in the NBA, you just need to survive in advance. And more than any individual performance, I think that's what you should probably take out of this Rockets-Clippers game on Thursday evening. Again, a 101-96 win for the Rockets, improving their record to 54-14 on the season, their NBA leading record. Now, jumping back into the show, we spent the first segment talking about the team implications. Rockets-Clippers matchups, the defense the Rockets showed holding a pretty loaded Clips offense below 100 points. Lou Williams just 6 of 18 from the field. But in my opinion, the biggest variable tonight was in the middle. Clint Capela against DeAndre Jordan. Clint had 19 points, 12 rebounds, and 6 blocks. My goodness, against one of the NBA's best perimeter defenders, that is an unbelievable line. Now, DeAndre did have 8 points, 18 rebounds, 2 blocks, but he committed 5 fouls. In general, I thought Clint helped, because Clint made DeAndre work. It also freed up other Rockets for the rebound. Trevor Ariza and P.J. Tucker each had 8. Eric Gordon had 6 in his 30 minutes. James Harden had 5. So many times, if you're Clint Capela going up against the league's leading rebounder like DeAndre Jordan, you're not going to be able to get the rebound many times. It can just be a matter of you at least occupying him so that your teammates can get those rebounds. P.J. Tucker down the stretch had a couple of big ones. Now, P.J.'s going to be remembered for just a baffling turnover in the last couple of minutes of the game that made things a lot hairier and closer than they should have been. But P.J. 8 boards, including 4 on offense. Even if Clint was not always getting the rebounds, and I use that loosely because Clint had 12 rebounds in the game, including 7 offensively. Clint was brilliant tonight. But even when he wasn't getting the rebounds, he was enough of a force on the middle against DeAndre Jordan that it opened up the floor for his teammates to get those rebounds because DeAndre was occupied. And this was a game, the Clippers, they're right there tied for the 8th spot, as we mentioned, with so many other teams, that tight bundle in the Western Conference and 4 through 10. They wanted this game. They thought they could get it, too, when they went up 12 midway through the third quarter. So for Clint Capela to take a punch from the likes of DeAndre Jordan, now a metaphorical punch, of course, but DeAndre brought it tonight. He was intense. He won the game. We mentioned the 5 fouls, the 18 boards. He threw his body around. He played 35 minutes. Look at the Clippers starters. Lou Williams played 36 minutes. Austin Rivers played 39. DeAndre Jordan, 35. Tobias Harris, 40. The Clippers wanted this game, and they have a lot of veterans. They were intense. Ultimately, the Rockets found a way to battle back. And you would expect the veterans, guys like certainly James Harden, but also Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, I mentioned Luke Bamute's plus 22, 10 points and 4 rebounds in his 25 minutes off the bench earlier. But for a fourth-year Clint Capela to do that, it reminded me of something that Doc Rivers, Clippers coach, said before the game. He was asked in the pregame media session about the evolution of Clint Capela over the years. And Doc told us that one of the things that he really admired, now he cited his good defense, said he was a better post scorer than you would think as well. That's not all rolls and dunks. He does have some low post touch. He can score over people, yada, yada. But the closing thoughts from Doc Rivers that really resonated with me were that he plays the game the right way. He plays hard every night. Speaking of Clint Capela. And this was a game with so many veterans on both squads. The Clippers went all out for it, given how precarious their playoff seed is. A fourth-year Clint Capela at 23 years old, it would be understandable if, especially in a game that's not huge significance to the Rockets, given their big lead in the standings, if maybe he wasn't all the way there. And recently, it has not been the best stretch for Clint Capela. He averaged over 30 minutes per game in February. It was the first month of his career that he had done that. And if you wanted to poke holes, you certainly could. In February, he averaged over 16 points and 12 rebounds per game in 30 minutes. In March, he's averaging below 10 points per game and below 10 rebounds per game. Now, still 9.7 points, 9.7 boards per game. You'll live with that. But that's including the game he had Thursday night against the Clippers. Even with that, he's still well off his February averages. And if you wanted to poke holes, you could say that, or you could question if he's regressing. Now, in my opinion, that would be premature. I think the Rockets having 5 games in 7 nights, coming off the heaviest minutes per game workload of any month of his entire career, again, playing over 30 minutes per in February, I think for a big man in particular, a young big man whose stamina has been the single biggest variable over the start of his career, it might be a little unfair to judge him too harshly, especially when these are games the Rockets have been able to win other than Toronto anyway, and Toronto actually had 13-13 against Valanciunas, so it's not like he was no-show then. Other than tonight, the Toronto game was the best one of his entire month. So the other games, he's underachieved a little bit statistically, but the Rockets have won the games anyway, so that's why I have a hard time kind of shining the microscope too brightly and saying, what is Clint Capela doing wrong? Well, if you had any questions, I thought he answered the bell tonight in a big way, because DeAndre Jordan, when he is committed, he's one of the biggest forces in the NBA. And so even on a night when DeAndre played 35 minutes, had 18 boards, for Clint Capela to get 12 boards and 6 blocks, a career best 6 blocks, the Rockets needed it, because this was one, we mentioned the Rockets, 12 of 41 from 3, below 30%. It wasn't pretty. And other than Eric Gordon, hardly anybody could throw it in the ocean. So you weren't getting your easy buckets, so that meant offensively need to value possessions, keep possessions alive. We mentioned the 7 rebounds he had on the offensive side. And then defensively, you had to buckle down. The Rockets, even with that furious closing kick, only had 101 points for the game. It took limiting one of the NBA's best offensive teams, top 7 in the Clippers, to 96 points to get this done. And Clint Capela on both ends of the court, defensively, he can take away easy buckets for the other team. And offensively, certainly he can be a lob machine when he's engaged, especially on that pick and roll. But also, just in terms of his presence in the offensive glass, he can be the key to unlocking some easier buckets when your perimeter shots aren't falling. That hasn't been the case much for the Rockets of late. So that's why Clint Capela, even though he's dipped statistically this month, you haven't necessarily seen a big impact on the Rockets on the floor. But when they needed him to answer the bell tonight, he did. Kudos to Clint. To me, individually, even on a night that James Harden, 24-7, was the clear difference maker down the stretch, Clint Capela, on the balance of the game, was your best player. The other guy who I would say, if Clint Capela was your best player on the balance of the game, he's 1A. Eric Gordon is 1B. Now, the statistics for Eric are a little misleading, because he had an 0 of 7 on Monday night, 0 of 6 from 3, had just 1 point. But after Sunday's win in Dallas, when he had 26 points on above 50% shooting, above 50% from behind the arc, I read the numbers back from the 6 games that he had played since coming back from the food poisoning and the injuries he had, the minor ones before the All-Star break. excluding that game against San Antonio, and in my opinion, night two of a road back-to-back, but more importantly, the fifth game in 7 nights, and night two of a road back-to-back in which the front end, he was asked to be the starter at shooting guard and essentially the number one scoring option in the absence of James Harden, who took off that Dallas game for either a sore left knee or maintenance, whatever you want to call it, but James was not out there. So, Eric, on Monday night, his shot was not there. We'll get him a couple of days off, and boy, did he respond. And since coming off the shelf, he is shooting over 50% from behind the arc. Just an incredible turnaround for a guy who, through the All-Star break, had a lot of Rockets fans concerned, shooting just above 33% from behind the arc, which is below average this year. Now, you could always argue that any Rockets attempts might or percentages might be a little skewed by high volume, but ultimately, even with the high volume, Eric Gordon's got to be better than 33%. He's turned it around. If there's one thing that encourages me about Eric the most, in my opinion, you're starting to see a strong correlation between rested Eric Gordon and worn down Eric Gordon. I'm not saying that this above 50% clip that he's been on from behind the arc over the past 7 or 8 games, however long it's been since he's come back, I'm not saying that's sustainable. Clearly it's not. But when you see games like Monday night in which he was 0 of 7, but there's a pretty clear reason for it, maybe the legs aren't quite all the way there, and then tonight, with 2 nights off, he shoots 8 of 13, 7 of 9 from behind the arc, 23 points in his 30 minutes, plus 19, that really encourages me, because you know what happens in the playoffs? There are no back-to-backs. In many cases, you get 2 nights off with regularity, especially in the first couple of rounds when there are so many series that the NBA is trying to space them all out for television purposes. This run for Eric Gordon, in which he's been otherworldly, about 50% from behind the arc over the past couple of weeks, since coming back on the Wednesday against the Clippers, that was the James Harden RIP Wes Johnson game a couple of weeks ago. It started when he had a couple of weeks off, so maybe that's not sustainable. But since then, about the only down games he's had are the ones like San Antonio that come on the back end of a back-to-back. Otherwise, especially those that have been on the front end, he has been a legitimate difference maker. So when you have a rested Eric Gordon playing like this, to me, it bodes really well because it shows you that a lot of his struggles, maybe it comes down to overuse, maybe it comes down to the scheduling grind with a guy who's about to turn 30. And if Eric Gordon's performance is this positive when he gets rest, then my opinion, certainly it bodes well for the short-term future. Other than Sunday, you have a back-to-back at New Orleans, at Minnesota, and Eric's in a groove right now. He can be streaky. He's playing well now, so certainly it bodes well for the short-term future. The Rockets holding on to number one seed. But long-term, if there's a big correlation between rested and tired Eric Gordon, in my opinion, that bodes really, really well for the playoffs when you're going to have a lot more space and time between games. Now, I've spent most of the podcast discussing the positive from tonight's game, a 101-96 win over the Clippers, Rockets putting 54-14 on the year. That's because, in my opinion, the negatives, for the most part, are just randomness. The Rockets shot 12 of 41 from behind the arc. Trevor Ariza and P.J. Tucker combined 3 of 17. Really don't think their shots were all that different from what they've been getting over the course of this stretch in which the Rockets won 20 of 21 games. They just missed them. Joe Johnson, 0 of 3 off the bench. He had wide open looks. He just missed them. Luke Bamute, 1 of 6 from behind the arc. Most of his were really good shots. He just missed them. Stuff happens over the course of an 82-game season, and so that's why I haven't been too down. The one guy I am a little down on is Chris Paul. 11 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, just 3 of 13 shooting in his 32 minutes, and a minus 10 in the plus-minus in his 32 minutes. The Rockets were clearly better when they had Eric Gordon out there in place of Chris Paul. It's been an uneven week for Chris Paul, but the one hole that I would poke in his resume over the past couple of weeks, he certainly had high points. He had 24 and 12 on above 50% shooting against the Mavs on Sunday night without Harden. I believe he shot 8 of 11 against the Spurs on Monday evening, led the team in scoring, I think, including that stretch in the fourth quarter in which we had all the great memes of James Harden holding a baby that took over the internet when he was cheering Chris on. Well, there's one thing about those two games that stands out. Certainly a Dallas game when James didn't play, but also many stretches of that San Antonio game. It's that Chris took over when James was not out there. You go back to the Toronto game, the only loss in the past 21. Chris shot 5 of 13 from the field, and he had the winning three down the stretch, or the potential winning three, I should say, wide open in the corner, 15 seconds left. He missed it. Now, that's just one play. That's one possession. I understand that. But in general, if you could nitpick the Rockets over the past couple of weeks, it's that Chris Paul has not been as dominant in the minutes that Chris and James have been out there together. Now, I'm not sounding the alarm bell. Some of it's probably just randomness. Also, tonight, I thought Chris kind of got into a battle with the officials. I mentioned the full-court press that the Clippers employed a few times in the first half. There were moments in there where there were some flops, some arm bars in which he thought that the officials clearly should have called fouls. Maybe they should have, but he started being more concerned about the refs than his own play. At one point, he got a technical. So, there's some extenuating circumstances, and it's not like he's getting bad looks. He was 0 of 6 from behind the arc tonight. I can only think of one of those 6 that was clearly a bad shot. He got some very open looks. He just did not make them. So, I think a lot of this is randomness. I think a lot of it's just fluctuations that happen over the balance of 82 games. But at some point, if it doesn't correct itself, then yeah, you do start to wonder. And this is not a very long sample size, and the Rockets have won all but one of these games anyway. So that's the good news, is that even if you're going through a week or two, however long it's been, in which Chris and James aren't quite in sync at the same time, well, you're winning the games anyway. That's how good the Rockets are, the best record of the NBA. So it kind of helps you work it out, in my opinion, because it doesn't provide too much pressure. Whereas if the Rockets were losing these games, you might have a huge spotlight, and all of a sudden it makes things all the more difficult to get over the hump, so to speak, because there's so much of a spotlight being shown on this particular dynamic. There's not going to be that much because the Rockets are winning anyway. But between those of us that are diehards, and I assume most of you listening to me here at Locked On Rockets are, we can be real about this. The past couple of weeks, it's not that Chris has been terrible overall. The Dallas game, he was great. Most of the San Antonio game, he was. But you haven't seen those stretches in which Chris and James together have been that dominant. The good news, they're about to be challenged in a big way. The good news, if you want it. These next 3 games in 4 nights, at New Orleans starting Saturday night, at Minnesota, at Portland, these are 3 Western Conference playoff teams on the road. It's not going to be easy. And you're probably not going to be able to win many of those games without having good efforts from both Chris and James, which probably entails both playing well at the same time at various facets. Ultimately, I think they'll do it. I think it's a minor thing. Also, I think you might could also point to the fact that the Rockets have had very little practice time of late. You go through a stretch in which you have 5 games in 7 nights, you get virtually no practices. They took Tuesday off because they just have had an insane amount of workload lately. So maybe now you get into, I'm sure they'll have a practice tomorrow, then you go out on the road starting Saturday night in New Orleans. Also, you get Ryan Anderson back. I think if there's one guy that benefits from Ryan Anderson the most, it might be Chris Paul, because you can see the chemistry between those two, the floor spacing. Ryan is, of course, he's a more consistent shooter than the likes of P.J. Tucker, Trevor Ariza, who are combined 2 of 9 from 3, as we said. Let's throw in Luke Bamute. Between P.J., Trevor, and Luke, they were 3 of 15 tonight from behind the arc, just 20%. Even though, overall, in the balance of the season, they're okay shooters, they're certainly not as feared as Ryan Anderson, so the spacing is not all the way there, because Chris is not as dominant physically as James is. I think the precise spacing, even with just a couple of extra feet that Ryan Anderson commands, I think that's especially valuable to Chris. But whatever the reason, they have been out of sync the last couple of weeks. Maybe Ryan's absence has a lot to do with that. We can also throw Joe Johnson in there. I think Joe, in general, has been far too criticized on Rockets Twitter, but he's shooting about 30% from behind the arc, and that's just not good enough. So Ryan, because of his shooting, is especially valuable for Chris. It looks like the Rockets are going to get him back starting Saturday in New Orleans after missing the past couple of weeks with the hip flexor, and maybe that's what starts to turn things for Chris Paul. Because that, to me, getting Chris in sync, we've seen moments, but especially when it's Chris and James together, if there's one thing to work on down the stretch of the year, that to me is the issue, getting Chris Paul in sync with James Harden down the home stretch of the year, as the Rockets, of course, want to hold on to the number one seed, but having a 3-game lead effectively with the tiebreaker with 14 games left, barring a collapse, you should be in good shape there, especially with the Warriors still not having Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Kevin Durant's status is questionable with a rib injury. But beyond just holding on number one seed, you want to be playing your best ball heading into the playoffs. And while a lot of the issues with the Rockets tonight were random, the one thing that I would say was not entirely random, that's more of a trend than a one-off, would be the performance of Chris Paul when James Harden is in the game. So I would think that that's going to be an emphasis for the Rockets in practice tomorrow. And my hunch is that maybe the return of Ryan Anderson on Saturday night also helps with that. Not that Ryan Anderson will go into the starting lineup. I think PJ Tucker, as your starting four, is secure right now. But I think ultimately you will see stretches which Ryan Anderson plays with both of those guys. And even if it just helps Ryan when James is not in the game, if it helps James get in more of a, or it helps Chris get in a rhythm in the same game that James is in, then ultimately that hot stretch may carry over to when James comes back in later in the second quarter or later in the fourth quarter, whatever it may be. I know I'm nitpicking here. The Rockets, again, 54-14, merger 20 in their last 21 games. Overwhelmingly positive would be my thoughts on the team, even a win like tonight, which wasn't always pretty, but I do want to keep it real. And so if there's one thing that's not especially positive over the past week or so that I would keep an eye on, it's the performance of Chris Paul with James Harden. And again, we'll see that microscope a lot more, I would think, starting this road trip when the margin for error shrinks substantially when you're going on the road against great teams, or good teams, not great teams, but good teams, like the Pelicans, Wolves, and Blazers, especially when those squads are at home. So until those games, I will sign off. As always, I appreciate you guys so much for tuning in to me here at Locked On Rockets. If you want more regular analysis, the best place to do it is on Twitter, or to find it, I should say. I am at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Also, email lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Facebook, that's at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, or at lockedonrockets.com, that's our website. That's all places you can reach out to me, leave comments, send me notes, any questions you've got about the team, suggestions for the show, inquiries about potentially being a sponsor. We've got such a huge audience these days with the Rockets playing this well. Also, thanks to awesome listeners like you guys who, for some reason, keep tuning in to listen to me ramble about basketball. I thank you guys so much for doing that. But yeah, anything we can do to make this even a better show for you, we want to do that, because right now we're the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets, and we want to be the best resource that we can be for you, the diehard fan, especially with a team that's this good, now 54-14 on the year. Oh, and one final note, courtesy of the Spurs defeating the Pelicans 98-93, the Rockets have now won the Southwest Division for the season, even with 14 games left and a month still to play. That's how dominant the Rockets have been. Credit to them. But it's just the sixth division title in Houston franchise history. So, folks, celebrate it. I know there are much bigger goals ahead, but it's tough to be the best team out of 30. There's a reason why only one team wins every year. This is a league where it is really, really hard. And the Rockets have been a dominant franchise. Well, dominant's probably too strong, but they've been a very good franchise for most of their tenure in Houston. Yet this is only their sixth division title in all these years. It's rare to be this good, especially to clinch it this early. I know there are bigger goals ahead, but this is an incredibly rare season. Once in a while, you got to stop and smell the roses. You don't have a basketball team this good that often. And so to win just your sixth division title in 50-plus years and to do it with basically a month left, yeah, it's pretty special. So I'll wrap up the show right there. Again, your 2017-2018 Southwest Division champions, your Houston Rockets, just the sixth time in franchise history. How sweet it is. So on that note, folks, enjoy the rest of your Thursday. And we'll be talking again this weekend when the Rockets get ready for the Pelicans and Wolves on the road. We'll be breaking down those games right afterward, right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.